presentation this afternoon. The first is that General Services' fundamental role is that of a service provider, and our services align with the business functions performed by our customers in the institutions, administrative offices, and community corrections programs. Secondly, the division strives to strike a critical balance between providing direct services using a central support model and coordinating with other groups across the department for those services that are better delivered in a decentralized manner. And third, the growth in staff is not always, of the General Services staff, has not always stayed consistent with the growth of the prison system, so we are continually looking for ways to improve the efficiency of our operation to compensate. And demand for our services has gone up as the overall operation of the department has matured to keep pace with this growth. If you turn to slide 3, talk to you a little bit about the purpose of the General Services Division. General Services supports the basic infrastructure that's fundamental to the day-to-day operations of DOC. That basic infrastructure supports DOC operations by assuring that bills are paid on time, the staff have access to information for day-to-day decision-making as well as strategic planning, that goods are ordered and distributed timely, fixed assets are managed, and that existing facilities are maintained. Slide 4. General Services' overall mission is to provide efficient, effective, just-in-time services at the lowest possible cost. And in the course of providing these services, we maintain critical links with other agencies in the development of statewide enterprise initiatives. Slide 5 is similar to one that you've seen from all the divisions, and it's just a kind of a high-level organization chart of General Services, outlining the 4 different units within General Services. And we're made up of the distribution services, facility services, fiscal services, and information services units. And I'll go into each one of those in detail here in a minute. But this is at the point at which I wanted to share with you a little more detailed information on our food services program, if that works for you, Mr. Chair.
Please.
So on slide number 7, what we tried to do here was just to give you a little bit of background and provide the context within which the food services administration program works. You can see there that we serve, roughly our count's about 13,400 inmates. And if you were to extrapolate that out into a biennium, we serve about 30 million meals during that 2-year period. And we've also listed there some of the more common commodities that we purchase and some of the volumes with which we purchase those commodities. On slide 8, I'd like to just take you back for a moment to the beginning of the program. So,
do you have the honors of having a caucus right now?
Thank you.
Okay.
They say it's going to be a 20-minute caucus.
All right. And
this is not a call of the House, but I am telling you that there's a caucus going on.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think we can continue without going to caucus, but we will need to know when we're. So, do you think we need to be in caucus? The veteran. I say you all.
Yeah, I'm ready to go on.
As much as they could use our insight, I'm sure survive without it. Why don't we continue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm on slide 8, and what I'm talking about, what this slide represents is the how things were before we actually implemented this program. So prior to 1997-99 biennium, food services was essentially decentralized. Food services programs ran independently with purchasing, food purchasing, menu creation, storage of goods, all managed at the institution level. And what that resulted in then was costs that varied throughout the system. On slide 9, after 1999, or 97, the 97-99, which is when this program was implemented, and what we did at that time was to create a food services administration program and consolidated then our purchasing and warehousing of food as well as other commodities. We created a central staffing for this program, established uniform menus, a single menu that we served to every day, and centrally managed the distribution system and had a central created a central warehouse and then a central distribution system from there. If you look at slide 10, what we show there is the advantages in terms of cost that we have been able to achieve since the program's inception. And as you can see, the food costs have steadily gone down since 1999 and have somewhat leveled off now because we've gotten all of the advantages of the we've actually, you know, it took us a couple biennium to actually get things working and efficiently working and achieving the maximum costs. These numbers are adjusted for inflation. And these were targets. We set targets for ourselves every biennium, and in every biennium, the actual cost has either met or exceeded these targets. So what I'd like to do now, beginning on slide 11, is just to step you through basically how the system works. We have a food market expert that combs the market daily, searching for the best food at the best price. And this is known as the spot buy or the opportunity buy system of purchasing. We're out there looking for, low cost but still good quality food to get the kinds of savings that we had demonstrated or that we showed in the graph before. With the input of the dietitian, the food services administrator identifies food commodities appropriate for an anticipated menu. So the food service administrator really functions as that food market expert, but he's receiving input daily from the dietitian to assure that he's out there looking for the right kinds of commodities to be able to eventually serve that balanced meal that I'll talk about here in a little bit. Periodically, the food services managers, and these are the food services managers at the individual institutions, the dietitian and the food service administrator meet to plan upcoming menus and also to manage the inventories. So as the process goes, we go out, we purchase the goods, we eventually get delivery on that, and when they come into our central warehouse, we then at that point inspect every load that comes in to assure that it meets the highest quality, that something hasn't happened in the transportation of that commodity that has damaged the food in such a way that we just can't accept it. And I wouldn't say routinely, but there have been occasions when we've had whole truckloads of commodity come in and determine that it wasn't anything that it had then become distressed on its way to us and have turned that whole truckload of commodity away.
Hey, can I ask you a question about that? So then is there a kind of a paper trail somebody signs off on whether or not the food is acceptable?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Okay. I'll show you here in a little bit the process of receiving, and it's pretty typical. You know, we execute a purchase order that says we're going to buy X commodity at a certain price and a certain quantity. And when that gets that comes into our receiving dock, we then check that against the purchase order to assure that we receive, you know, the quantity that and at that point are checking the quality as well. And then if we were to reject it, then we would note that and it would go into our records.
And I'll let you guys ask your question, Parker, and then Brown.
Yeah, thank you. In the recent stuff in the paper, I saw real accusations of food that said for bait only, those kind of things. I'm hoping you can tell me that's not true.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barker, we have asked, we've heard those stories. We've asked for people to present for us any documentation that would show that, and to date we haven't seen that. I mean, if it exists out there, we'd like to see it so we can track it down because we don't serve that, we don't buy nor serve that kind of food.
Thank you.
Senator Brown.
Thank you. This may be a really crazy question, but it's been sort of a crazy day. I know we're having students in the classroom starting to grow their own food. My sense is that property is not an issue. We can grow with hot boxes, you can grow lettuce around all year round. Have you thought about, is anybody having inmates essentially grow their own food? You got nutritional value, all that kind of stuff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Brown, in fact, we do in the summertime. Just about all the institutions have a garden that the inmates maintain, and then that's used in the to supplement their diets and to give them fresh vegetables through the summer months and then into the fall.
Okay.
In fact, they used to have a slaughterhouse as well, but somebody thankfully decided that lopping the heads off of cows all day might not be the most pro-social activity for a man's return to the community. Thought I'd share that. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, continuing on to slide 12, so what happens is we take delivery of that commodity or those goods in our central warehouse, and then the institutional food service managers, they order from our central warehouse based on the approved menu that's been delivered to them. And our central warehouse then fulfills and delivers those goods.
Representative Cannon, would you like to join us at the
dais? For a few minutes, thank you.
Okay. Continue. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When the food is delivered to the institutions, this is another inspection point that the food services staff inspect the food at that delivery point, and also there's also a third one then, because what happens is the food is delivered, it may sit in dry storage or in the freezer or in the cooler, depending on what food it is, and then it may be there for 2 or 3 days before they actually take it out and prepare it. So it's inspected then a second time at the institutional level prior to actually preparing that meal. Meals are prepared at the institution in accordance with proper sanitation and safety guidelines. Meals are sampled by correction staff prior to serving. Sample trays of each meal are kept frozen for 3 days, and this is so that if there happens to be an outbreak, potentially of a foodborne illness, we can go back and take a look at those trays and have them analyzed to see whether or not that might not be the source of the illness. To date, to my knowledge, there has been no, at least in the most recent history, has been no outbreak of foodborne illnesses coming from our food services. Also, institution kitchens are audited annually by our Food Services Administration staff, and we look at proper safety, sanitation, and operating efficiencies. I'd like to, starting on slide 13, to walk you through very quickly the systems of controls that we have in place, both the general and the specific system of controls. The first are the general systems controls, and at the center of this is the menu itself and the nutritionally certified menu. We've got listed there the four major players that work into that whole system. The food services administrators I described, the person out there buying the food, the food services manager, they're actually out there preparing it and serving it, the dietitian who's planning the meals, and the inventory manager who's managing that central warehouse to assure that we've got the right foodstuffs to be able to deliver out to our food services managers. And in order for this program to be successful, those things have to be in balance. If any one area, if the food service administrator or the food buying expert, food market expert, if they're out there buying just one commodity that wouldn't allow us to build a nutritional menu, it would be out of balance and there would be an issue there. And these folks meet regularly to assure that we're maintaining the right kind of food at the right quality for the program. The other level of controls is the more specific controls, is what the kinds of things I was talking about earlier, Mr. Chair, that you would see, the kind of financial, fiscal sorts of controls that are in place to assure that there is a proper separation of duty and that procurement, fiscal and procurement processes are actually in compliance. And that starts with the food services administrator and their staff who are actually out there negotiating and getting competing bids to assure that we really are getting the lowest price for that commodity. They then put together a purchase request, which goes to a whole other organization to actually then look over that purchase request. They do some spot checks. They'll do spot checks of some of the requests coming in to assure that the bids that were quoted are the lowest bids. They also take a look at, for every purchase, they do a six-month history check to assure that, to take a look and make sure that what we've been buying for that commodity is within the range of what we've been paying for over the last 6 months. Once they're assured that this is a good purchase, they then release that and the purchase is executed to the vendor. Then that product is received. That comes into the central warehouse. And again, that's a whole other part of our organization that then does, as I explained earlier, Mr. Chair, will take that PO, goes through the receiving document, or receives it, makes sure that everything that we said that we ordered in terms of quantity is there. They check that off, store it into the warehouse. And then eventually, when we're invoiced, that comes in again to a whole other section, our financial section, to actually pay the bill, where they put together the invoice, the receiving document, the purchase order, put that all together, and as long as that's all in order and it checks out, they pay the vendor.
Can I ask you a question about that? In Director Williams' conversation we had about this, he said that this particular part of the food service operation hadn't been audited recently, but other, you know, there's all kinds of audits going on in the department at one time or another. Have you gone back and taken a look at, you know, the last 2 or 3 years of history, and do you have any sense of, you know, how faithfully the system was being executed?
Well, Mr. Chair, in taking a look at, I guess, the bottom line, which is, you know, the reduced food costs, we'd say that it has been successful and has been working in terms of getting us the lowest bid and getting us the lowest price on the commodities that we're purchasing. As far as taking a look at the system itself and the actual controls from an audit standpoint, we haven't done that in the most, you know, well, probably actually since the program started, but I think Mr. Williams is going to talk here in a minute about some things that we do have planned in the near future with respect to that.
Great, thank you.
So on slide 15, in conclusion, with the implementation of this program, food costs have decreased while continuing to serve nutritionally wholesome meals. And the other thing I might point out that is the facility that I just described, where we have been able to realize food savings, has also given us opportunities in other non-food purchases, such as paper products and kitchen supplies, to keep those down as well. I think at this point I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we do appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation given sort of the most recent press information regarding this issue. You'll recall, I think on the first opportunity I had to appear in front of this committee, this session happened to be the day that story was breaking in the newspaper and gave us an opportunity to lay out our position. And I want to just reiterate to you that the department continues to cooperate with the federal authorities who are conducting that investigation, and that investigation is still ongoing into the alleged actions of an individual who was at that time employed by the Department of Corrections and involved in purchasing food products. That investigation continues, and one of the commitments that I made both to the governor and to the federal authorities is that we would fully cooperate and not launch into a whole bunch of our own approaches to reviewing that situation that would in any way, shape, or form interfere with the process of their criminal investigation. And we continue to wait for them to complete their work to be able to do that. That being said, I want to take just a minute and lay out for the committee what our intention is and what arrangements we've made. We're really planning on having two separate groups of organizations review this process, and one of them breaks down essentially into a fiscal controls review group. That group will review the department's policies, procedures, practices with respect to purchasing, particularly the spot buy or opportunity buy system. And the way that group is put together currently is a commitment from the DAS State Controllers Division, the DAS State Procurement Office, the Department of Justice, and the Secretary of State's office. So those four folks from outside agencies will come together and do a review of our policies, procedures, and procurement process relative to how this system worked. We anticipate that we would get recommendations from them, an analysis of what went right, what might have been done differently in this situation, and an overall sense of the effectiveness of the system that we have currently operating within the department. The second group is going to be a group that's going to focus on these questions associated associated with food quality. As Mr. Koreski pointed out, we don't have any history that anybody in our medical department can find that we've had any significant medical issues as a result of any kind of food-borne illnesses in our system. And on top of that, a review of our system of grievances suggests that in literally a review period where we looked at 45 million meals, the number of food quality grievances that moved through at that time was almost so statistically insignificant that there was just almost no way to measure it. That's how small it is. That being said, it is a large institutional food service program, and so as those of you who have been in the system and eaten the meals in the system, as I've pointed out to plenty of people, it's not haute cuisine. I mean, there is, in fact, they are institutional meals. But we wanted to dispel any concern about food quality. So we have requested technical assistance from the National Institute of Corrections, from out of state, who would come in and assist us in a review of the food quality aspect, how we've managed our kitchens, how we've arranged for, how we store, transport, deliver, and operate that system, as well as Department of Human Services Public Health and the Oregon State University Nutrition Program will be involved in that review as well. And as soon as the federal authorities have cleared me to move forward with these, we've arranged the individuals to participate in these reviews, and as soon as I can get word from the federal authorities that this won't be interfering with their criminal investigation into these issues, we will essentially charter these two separate outside groups to come in and do this review. And report back to not only us, but to the director of the Department of Administrative Services and to the governor's office with any findings or recommendations they have for the department. And we are happy to share those with the legislature and this committee to the extent that you're in session. And if you're not in session at the point that these reviews are completed, we'll be happy to share them with the emergency board or come back next February and share the findings with you at that time.
Just Representative Nicholson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am extremely reluctant to suggest monkeying with something that appears to be working very well, with very good reviews, if you will, by lack of complaints about the quality of the food and the absence of foodborne illness. It sounds like things are really working well. However, healthcare costs, whether it's in the system or for everyone else, healthcare costs are tremendous. And as we've heard from your presentations, healthcare costs for inmates is a really large thing to deal with. To the extent that nutrition, or you are what you eat, to the extent that food contributes to wellness, I would also be interested to learn if there's anything about diet that would help avoid continuing increasing costs in the healthcare side of things.
And Mr. Chairman and Representative Nathanson, we can certainly, while we're working with the OH or the OSU people, include that and see if they've got some recommendations. We are putting some information based on your earlier comments to respond to the rest of the committee, Representative, about not only sort of the physical fitness type programs and activities that are available with the department, but also the other kinds of eating options that people do have, including the opportunity for anyone in the system who wants to, for example, have a vegetarian tray to have access to those kinds of other options. We typically don't require in our program that you walk through and you get a tray and you have to eat everything on the tray. If a person chooses not to want the dessert option that's being offered that day or whatever it might be, the cookie, which by the way we have a tray full for you to sample here if you're interested, if the person chooses not to have that, there's nobody making them eat those. So there is a lot of flexibility around what a person can choose to eat within the system, and it's like to a great degree the rest of us, you can make good choices and poor choices depending on your personal motivation.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad to hear you say when you were going through this analysis of changes you want to make that you also wanted to analyze what's going right, because during the news coverage on the situation that's being investigated now, it was said in some of those stories that a lot of correctional institutions don't operate at all on the spot market, which means that they're paying more for for long-term contracts or whatever the option is. So I would hope, I would really want to encourage a real close look at what did go right in that situation. I mean, there was a lot of creativity, a lot of entrepreneurial thinking, and some possible criminal activity. And if you can just get rid of, you know, find safeguards against what went wrong. But I'd hate to see the correctional, the Department of Corrections, in an interest to avoid any possible criminal activity, go too far and just eliminate the spot market altogether, because from everything I read, that piece of the program really was working effectively for everyone.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, we appreciate that. It really is our hope that these outside reviews will look at both, you know, the pluses and any kind of procedural or policy or processes, minuses that we should have considered and can put in place. We are very much about not wanting to throw the baby out with the bathwater. The indications are that despite the alleged activity that has made the newspapers, the reality is that there has been substantial savings for the state over a period of time in the way we've managed and procured food. And given, you know, the challenges we have within this budget, we think that's a good thing, and that we ought not, you know, we ought to be careful about going too far. So we appreciate that.
If I could follow up, Mr. Chair, it also the spot market also offers an opportunity to really inject some of the things that Representative Nathanson was talking about, which is opportunities to really go for some higher quality food that for whatever reason, surplus or getting close to its pull date or whatever, is available that might. I would love to see the nutritional density of the food considered as a criterion as you explore the spot market.
We can certainly make sure that when we ask these food quality folks to do a review, that they give us not only some recommendations, but also some sense of comparisons. That's one of the reasons we ask the National Institute of Corrections to provide technical assistance, because delivering food in a correctional setting is going to be different than the kinds of options potentially you'd have if you were operating a university system and a bunch of dormitories. I mean, it is a different kind of a model, and we think that their expertise from other states or the federal system being involved in that review makes a lot of sense.
And, Ms. Williams, I presume that either the federal authorities or your office has given a directive to staff to preserve any old documents related to this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, that right from the get-go, all of that information was identified. All the records have been saved and are being reviewed right now, and all of that's being done.
Okay. Now moving on to slide six, I'm going to take you back up a layer higher now and talk about the four units within General Services Division. First, Distribution Services. Distribution Services is the primary logistical support operation for managing our assets, and as we just covered, the Food Services Administration Program, as well as managing the inmate commissary, or sometimes referred to as the inmate canteen. Facility Services, slide 17. Provides oversight for institution physical plant operations by setting priority for deferred maintenance, establishing building material standards, developing common operating procedures, and managing large projects at existing facilities. They also provide statewide support for the agency's wireless radio communication systems. And finally, they oversee institutional maintenance and repair activities for code compliance.
You need to pause, John.
Okay, thanks.
Can they call me?
Why don't we continue until, but shortly we may have to go up to vote, and I think we should be able to come back because I really do want to get us on track with our schedule.
I think I'll head up in about 2 minutes. They said the vote is imminent.
I'll hang until you guys can come back.
When we get the call, we'll do our recess. And then, is that all right?
Yeah,
I think there should be more than just a couple of us hearing this important information. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
Moving on to slide 18, Fiscal Services. Provides the basic financial services related to financial transaction accounting, inmate trust, contracts and purchasing, and the preparation of the agency's financial accounting report.
Okay. Representative Becker.
Sorry, I need to break it up. When you were talking about the inmate canteen, I just wonder what kind of things you have in place to protect the inmate. And what I'm thinking of is I saw a program that was in another state where a con said, well, how do you get things if you don't have any money? He said, that's easy. A big, guy who'd been in a while. So that's easy. I just make a sugar sandwich and sell it to another convict for $10. So is there some way you're able to protect the weak from being exploited like that?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Barker, any time you have large congregations of offenders in places like this, the opportunity for people to be coerced exists, and the department works very hard, responds to information that we get from inmates about the possibility of that kind of pressure and coercion. We do monitor inmate purchases off the canteen, and we have rules in place that you can't own or you can't be in the possession of someone else's property, and we know what property an inmate's allowed to have, and if an inmate ends up with property that's not theirs, that's a misconduct, and that's acted on. And so we have all the standard procedures in place to do everything we can to avoid that kind of situation. Like anything where things are regulated like that, that does happen. There's no question about it, and when it does, and when we're aware of it, and when we've been informed of it, and know about it, we take all the appropriate action to return the property and hold the individual who's violated those rules accountable.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to slide 19, Information Services, which is the final unit within Distribution Services, within General Services, manages and maintains computer services for over 5,000 users in 13 prison sites and 36 county offices. They develop and maintain the software that supports business functions throughout the department, and they also administer both our staff and inmate telephone systems.
Before you go on, so some of your funding for this, I'm sure you'll get to this later, but comes from other funds tied to the COPs. Is that correct? Or for planning for the next prison?
Mr. Chair, some of our policy packages that we're asking for are COP funded, and the startup for Deer Ridge is COP funded. And
so deferred maintenance would be in this budget?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the deferred maintenance portion of our COPs is included in this budget under our facilities component. The portion for the design for the next build is actually in the administration budget, because that new construction unit is housed in the Office of Population Management that reports directly to my office. Great.
That's helpful. Thanks. Representative Dickinson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But to what extent does the department take advantage of video conferencing for meetings or interviews for training, whether it's staff or inmates?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, actually we use it extensively for staff. Where we'll have three or four institutions, particularly if we're having a meeting here in Salem and we're going to include people from Ontario or Umatilla. We do that quite frequently. The other area that we use video conferencing is with our inmates. And so we have a connection in every institution for video conferencing for staff, as well as connection to, I think, just about every court in the state. And so this keeps obviously our transport needs there, so we can actually have video arraignments and that kind of thing right over the video system.
Follow up. Are there any opportunities for inmates to take advantage of educational or training programs available through video conferencing, whether they might be something offered by, there are telecommuting courses, for example, offered by community colleges? Is that an area that you've either been looking into or taking advantage of?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nathanson, actually, no, that isn't. We limit quite extensively the offender's access to outside systems. Now, one thing that we have created an inmate network that is tightly controlled, that is for their access. And one of the things that we do is that we do educational electronic-based training kinds of things through that system.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Nathanson, if I could just chime in as well. We're also considering in putting a little bit of effort into the possibility of a pilot program at a couple of our most remote institutions to create the opportunity for some sort of a video visit. Places like Lakeview, for example, where the visiting rates for the inmates who are housed there are very, very low, the idea would be to arrange something maybe in one of our Valley institutions where someone could go to make the visit, actually sit in front of a video monitor and have a 15 or 20 minute video visit with an inmate at another, you know, at one of those more remote institutions. There's a lot of logistical challenges to that, but it is something that we're considering at those more remote institutions to try to create an opportunity for families to connect with their inmates just more than over the telephone.
Okay, moving on to slide 20, you'll see a chart there that's similar to ones you've seen from other divisions that shows the division's budget as compared to the overall department budget and a percentage of both the dollars, total funds, as well as FTE. The next slide, slide 21, shows the breakdown of the various, the four units within the division, again, both in total dollars as well as FTE. Now moving on to slide 22, gives you a history of the General Services Division budget, as well as shows our staffing over those same biennia. Now, one thing I would want to point out is that I show this on this slide as well as the next. What our staffing has done, administrative areas are an area is an area that tends. When we're in difficult budget times, we tend to go there to look for cuts. And in the 0305, as this shows, was one area that that we did experience some cuts. If you go to the next slide, I've just showed there the our FTE history and showing what has happened in relation to the growth. Again, I guess the issue here is that we haven't always kept pace with the prison growth. Now, the way that we've dealt with this is that we have looked for ways to improve through process improvement, looking for efficiency measures. And the other thing I would point out here, too, is that one of the most difficult areas to staff and where we oftentimes look for cuts is in the central units, not so much out in the institutions. So this is a segue then into our budget drivers and the first budget driver that I'd like to talk to you about, which is the growth of the department. So as the department has grown, there's been an increased demand for our service for the services we provide. And additionally, the more geographically dispersed that we are creates some more logistical support challenges for us. Now, we've responded to this by communicating with our business partners to prioritize our work, develop standards and procedures, automate as many processes as possible, and cross-train staff to provide more flexible staffing options. The next budget driver is around repairs and upgrade of our aging institutions. We have 13 prisons that range widely in age throughout the state, and the older prisons are in constant need of repair and upgrade. The newer prisons, the interesting thing is that the newer prisons then require a different set of technical skills. And I guess I would just say that, if you name it, we probably have it, all the way from a boiler that dates back to the 1950s to the newest, most state-of-the-art heating and cooling systems. And so we have to maintain staff that are able to manage that wide variety of equipment that we have out there. So the way we've responded to this is we prioritize our repairs. I mean, you've heard us talk about our deferred maintenance list, and what that is taking a look at all those repairs we have out there, categorizing them, and putting them in a priority order, and as we have funds available, working on those issues. We consolidate like kinds of projects, so if we had a roofing project, maybe in a number of institutions, we'd go out and try to get maybe one vendor then to reduce the cost for that job.
I don't know if you can answer this question. If you throw out OSCI and what is it, five new ones? You got five new prisons in the last 10 years, 15 years?
Mr. Chair, Senator Westland, I think it depends on how you're counting new, but yes, if you Warner Creek, the Deer Ridge that we're currently building in Madras, Coffee Creek, the facility in Umatilla,
Lakeview.
Right, that's the Warner Creek facility. And then whether you do or you don't include the expansion at Snake River that happened in the mid 90s.
Okay, so you throw out the really old and the very new. What's the average age or median age of, you know, the rest of the institutions?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Westland, I'm not sure I could even do that. The building we were in today with Representative Hannah and Representative Cameron at SCI was an old state mental facility built in the 40s. The one at EOCI that was a state mental hospital we took over and turned into a prison in the 1980s, that facility, I want to say, was built in the 20s or 30s, but I'm uncertain about the dates. The penitentiary, you know, has been there since 1866, but obviously the buildings in use now, you know, are from probably the 50s forward, mainly with probably some that date back maybe a little older than that. So mid-50s probably?
Yeah, I was going to say. Okay, it's kind of a... I just wanted, because we tend to, you know, look at the new, and we tend to emphasize the old, and I was just going, Okay.
Yeah, but the issues in those 50s buildings, like OSCI, for example, that was built in the 1950s, Mr. Wilson was on that tour today, and I mean, it's a, you know, lots of old asbestos acoustic tiling and old asbestos tiles on the floor, and, you know, and when code didn't require that you had, you know, sprinkler systems, and I mean, it's those kinds of things that we're, you know, addressing sort of today, 50 plus years after the fact.
Yeah, and I know we've been very lavish in our, you know, deferred maintenance budgets over the years. So.
And the only other thing that I would add here then is that we are asking, I'll speak to this a little later in my presentation, $24 million in COP financing to address some of our more critical needs on that deferred maintenance list. The next budget driver I'd like to talk about is increased dependence on automation. The agency continues to find ways to do business more efficiently and effectively through automation.
Excuse us, I don't know. I'll find out when I get up there.
Oh, come on. What the hell's the vote?
It's on the, in the
corporate. Okay, good.
So we'll take a
recess.
10-minute recess.
Don't leave me alone with him.
we will reconvene after recess. Subcommittee on Public Safety, Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Colleagues, we're going to end our discussion for the day, and we will bring Mr. Kresge and on Senate Bill 5505, Mr. Kresge, Ms. Honeywell, and Ms. Peters back tomorrow, correct? So my apologies.
We understand, Mr. Chair.
I have my orders.
Thank you.
This meeting is adjourned.